Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new season of University Drive, our University of the Bahamas talk show. I'm your host, Tamika Lundy. We are so excited to bring you season 10 of the show. It's a huge milestone for us, and you, yes, all of you, have been a part of our journey. So on behalf of all of us here at University Drive, we extend a very heartfelt thank you to all of you for giving us your attention, for listening to our conversations, and generally supporting our university community. In this new season, we have many more great shows and stories of impact to share with you on our road to progress where no one is left behind. We as Bahamians love it. Our hands reach for it in the food stores. We use it and we pair our imaginations with it to make it flavorful and palate pleasing, as do so many other people around the world. But is it poisoning us? You love it now, but will you still love it at the end of this show? It's rice. We'll see. Joining us, our guest, Executive Director of the Small Island Sustainability Research Center, interim that is, Dr. Carlton Watson, and Assistant Professor of UB, Dr. Williamson Gustav. Both of them are from UB, as I've said, and they have done groundbreaking research on arsenic in rice sold in the Bahamian market. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you for having us, Tamika, and congratulations on your 10th season. This is quite a milestone, so we're happy to be here on such an occasion.
Thank you, Tamika. Thank you for the invite. And I'm happy to be here to have a discussion on rice with you.
And we are happy to have you both as our first guests for season 10. Look at that. Look at the seat of honor that you both are holding, and we're glad for it. Now, why of all things have you cast your expert gaze on the beloved rice? What prompted this study?
Well, I used to eat a lot of rice, and I grew up in a household where we cook a lot of rice. And then I studied in China where rice is, you know, people eat a lot of rice in Asia. And I happened to work in a lab doing my PhD where we focus on rice and contaminants on rice and what it means for the population. And that kind of sparked the interest after I was done with my studies to repeat the study here in the Bahamas, because we don't grow rice. We eat a lot of rice. We import a lot of our rice from these different places that already have issues with contamination in their market. And we can only assume that they are saving the best for themselves and they are singing us whatever they don't use. So that's why we wanted to look at rice and see what risks one will get from eating rice locally.
So at the time, I was aware of the work that Williamson was doing in China. And as you know, he's also an alumnus of the institution. So I was familiar with him and actually visited China where he was. We were on a separate mission, but I took some time to visit his lab. And fortuitously, at the same time, I was having conversations with folks from BAFSA, which is the Bahamas Agriculture Health and Food Safety Authority, about the kinds of things that we ought to be looking at in terms of food health and safety. And so it just made a lot of sense. And I must take the time also to acknowledge that BAFSA helped fund this study. So we are indeed grateful for the support that they provided. Dr. Patricia Johnson was one of the main contacts there who facilitated this. And so it just made a lot of sense given, as Williamson said, our prevalence of rice, the amount of rice that we eat. I'm I'm a rice junkie, basically. That's my main. I eat a lot of rice still. And so based on that, we then began to have discussions and formulate a sort of research plan that we could conduct at a preliminary level, because it's important to note that the work, the results that we have are preliminary, and that we would want to continue to study this some more, as well as other kinds of staple foods.
All very fascinating. And fast forward to publication, and the name of your study is Prevalence of Arsenic Contamination in Rice and the Potential Health Risks to the Bahamian Population, a Preliminary Study. And so I see here that a total of 21 different rice brands were collected. Let's talk a little bit about that, but let's establish first and foremost that arsenic is poison, is it not?
Yes,
Poisonous.
arsenic is a non-threshold contaminant, which means that any amount of arsenic, if exposed to it over a long period of time, can cause you to become sick. And there are like many instances where arsenic have been linked not only to cancer, but to non-cancer related diseases such as diabetes, kidney failure, high blood pressure. In fact, in the East, where arsenic is very prevalent in drinking water, for more specifically West Bengal, they have a ridiculously high incidence of various type of skin and organ cancer because of arsenic exposure.
And so you surveyed 21 different rice brands. When did this happen? What was your process for doing this study?
So, in terms of the collections, we collected rice from just from the food stores, and we did so in a in a randomized way, from different food stores and different locations, different size food stores, just to make sure it wasn't we could eliminate any effects due to local source or other kinds of contaminants. We then sorted and packaged those samples. And then Dr. Gustav Williamson actually carried out the analysis of those rice, and he could speak more about the specific types of analyses that he used.
So once we receive the rice and from the different food stores, we then separate them into the different brands or the variety. And after we separate them into the brands, then we separate them into different varieties. So for example, you may buy Mahatma rice, right? But Mahatma rice have long grain, then they have basmati, they have jasmine. So these will be the different varieties. Once we separated the brands into their different varieties, then we measure the arsenic and other heavy metal contaminants that are present in the rice. And we once we quantify the concentration of arsenic, we then determine the speciation of arsenic that is in the rice samples before we carry out our calculations to estimate the risk that one will get from eating the rice products.
Okay, so what I'm interested now in finding out is there any rice that doesn't have arsenic globally?
No, there, you see, rice is a hyperaccumulator of arsenic, right? So once rice is being grown in any field, it will accumulate arsenic because arsenic occurs naturally, especially in places where rice is are grown. And if it's not occurring naturally, we would have added arsenic to the soil because back then we didn't view arsenic as being as toxic as we know today. So a lot of our fertilizers, the pesticides that we use, contain arsenic in it. So we've added arsenic into our soil. So I wouldn't say that you'll find a rice variety or brand that has no arsenic, but then you have certain varieties, certain brands that has minimal amount of arsenic in them, depending on how that rice is cultivated. As a general rule of thumb, if the rice is grown in environments where it doesn't experience long period of flooding, then you will have a rice that has less amount of arsenic in it. And then if the rice is grown in the West, it tend to be contaminated with organic arsenic as compared to rice that is grown in the East, which is contaminated with inorganic arsenic. And the organic arsenic is far less toxic than the inorganic arsenic because our bodies can deal with the organic form of arsenic and cannot really tolerate the inorganic form of arsenic. But if you eat rice and you eat it as is recommended, then you should not have any problem within your lifespan.
So what I'm also hearing then is threshold of arsenic in the rice is what is the concern. And I see here that you discovered, one of the things we discovered was that 79% of the rice samples had arsenic concentration values that were carcinogenic risks, and 57% of had concentrations that suggested non-carcinogenic health risks. Let's break down the word carcinogen so that we can all understand what that means and what these percentages mean.
Okay, so when something has a carcinogenic health risk, it simply means that if you continue to consume it at the rate you are doing now, at some point in your lifespan, you will develop cancer. But I want to point out something that when we measured the rice sample, the arsenic concentration in 98% of all of the samples that we measured were within the WHO specification, which is once you have less than 200 ppb of arsenic in it. However, in the Bahamas, we don't eat rice as recommended by the WHO, right? Or as recommended by the daily servants. We eat a lot of rice. On average, average adult Bahamian will eat just as much rice as, and in some cases, even more rice than what is consumed in Asia. So when we factor the amount of rice that we consume on a daily basis, and that amount is so much, and then we use that to do the calculations, we see now that although the rice on the market have arsenic below the recommended threshold, but because we eat so much of it, we are still at risk of developing cancer or non-cancerogenic illnesses from consuming rice or rice products.
Right. So, Tamika, to really emphasize the point, the numbers that you gave earlier really integrate our consumption level. They don't. They're not independent of just the rice samples themselves. And so, the rice, what we found was that there wasn't anything particularly alarming. There are some species, some varieties of rice where we find some high level approaching the thresholds or right at the thresholds. But for the most part, the majority of rice are below the threshold. It's only when we factor in our consumption level, and we all know that we have there's you know there have been numerous studies that look at the obesity level in the Bahamas, our consumption, particularly of rice. So from that perspective, it should not be too surprising. I think what this study demonstrates, though, is that when you present quantifiable or quantified or scientific research that support or demonstrate something that we kind of intuitively know, I think it brings a lot more focus to it. And that's really the importance of more research in this area, because we need to have a more educated and aware citizen. And one way we do that is actually to conduct research and move some of these ideas from just speculation to the scientific domain.
And we can't discount the value of data-based decision making. And so I'm starting to see now why this study is really a preliminary study and the potential that exists for so many other studies based on the information that you have uncovered here. Is there anything that you discovered in this study that was surprising to you? What other highlight, and we're going to take one before we approach the break. What other highlight in terms of your findings is super important for our listeners to know and the wider Bahamas?
I would say the idea of consuming brown rice or unpolished rice and linking that to being a healthier alternative as compared to polished rice should be highlighted, because what we observe is that all of our samples that either met the threshold or were above the threshold for arsenic were brown rice varieties.
Break that down even further, because a lot of people in this country are not consumers, I would venture to say, of brown rice. We like that bleached rice, right? variety. So
Well,
what else can you say about that?
after Christmas and we get into the spirit that we want to start to be healthy, the first thing we do, we say we're going to increase fiber, we're going to eat organic, and we're not going to eat foods that have been heavily processed. So when rice is not heavily processed, it's not bleached, it's not being exposed to all of these other downstream processes, it still gets its husk, which is basically that brown covering over the rice. What happens is a lot of the contaminants that rice accumulate will be stored on this husk. So when you consume this so-called brown and healthy rice, then you are consuming a lot of the metal that the rice would have accumulated, because that metal is being stored mostly in the husk, as compared to when you eat polished rice, where the husk is completely removed.
Understood. So this is when we are going to be taking our first break. We have joining us as our guests, Dr. Carlton Watson and Dr. Williamson Gustav, who are both interrupting our love story with rice with their study called The Prevalence of Arsenic Contamination in Rice and the Potential Health Risks to the Bahamian Population. We'll take this break and be back after this.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics and procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Welcome back to University Drive. We're talking about a study conducted by Dr. Carlton Watson and Dr. Williamson Gustav on arsenic contamination in rice in the Bahamian market. The information that you're uncovering in this study, this has implications for, I would imagine, selections of brands and food imports, because we don't grow rice in the Bahamas, but we do,
Exactly.
surely do. We import it in very high volume. And so this now is how you are able to connect new knowledge and the research that UB researchers are doing with the decisions that need to be made. How are we bridging the gap in that regard?
Right. So this really emphasizes the importance of these studies in terms of informing policy. And we hope that, again, with further studies, it could support policy decisions that create greater investments in actual testing and monitoring. One of and this is not necessarily reflected in this paper, but one of the things that we often that I think we should focus on as well, there's a conversation about food security, but food security without food safety is not a good strategy. So even if we talk about producing foods locally, we should not assume that because it's produced locally, that it does not pose any risk through contaminants or even fertilizers or pesticides or herbicides. And I think Dr. Gustav could really speak more to that.
Yes, I think Dr. Watson has made a very good point. When we produce food locally, or when we produce the so-called organic foods, we by default think that these foods are automatically safe. But the research out there have shown a lot of these foods are not really as safe as we perceive them to be. So for example, if you have an organic farm where you use no synthetic fertilizer, you are fertilizing your crops with, let's say, chicken manure or cow manure. These manure in themselves may contain both heavy metals and biological contaminants that can affect and further hinder food security and food safety. For example, like chicken, we give chicken a little bit of arsenic because a little bit of arsenic is very good for chicken. It will help that chicken grow very, very quickly. But when the chicken don't use all of the arsenic that we give it, it excrete a bunch of it in its dunk, right? So when you add that to your garden, your organic garden, a lot of that arsenic now enters your soil. And once it's inside the soil, it's a done thing. It's never going to come out. And any plant that you plant in there can accidentally uptake this arsenic and accumulate the arsenic in the edible parts. And then when you eat that plant, you expose yourself to arsenic. And then we also treat our livestock with antibiotics. So their dung will contain microbial species that are very likely to be resistant to antibiotics. So if you become contaminated, infected with one of these microbes, then that can pose a serious health risk for you that you get from eating these so-called organic and safe foods that are being grown locally. I just wanted to add that part.
So it's the knowledge, eh? Knowledge is power. A more knowledgeable populace is a more knowledgeable consumer, right? Earlier, both of you referred to and touched on consumption. And I think that is a huge mitigating factor, because especially when you think about the fact that you do have arsenic in certain foods, you do have it in the soils, right? But the more you consume of something, the more you're exposing yourself to health risks. So there is the potential for even more studies in this regard, right?
Yes, certainly. And I think when you look at the, some of the recommendations from the paper and why we really emphasize this as preliminary, I think one of the things that we would want to look at further is getting some more or accurate or validating the results we got in terms of consumption. We use a sample pool and we use some self-reporting data. And so it is possible that the uncertainty in that data could be very large. And so we emphasize that this is something that we need to focus on, doing more full diet studies across all food types and consumption, water as well, and beverages, I think would be very helpful as a national effort so that further studies could, we could minimize the uncertainty in those kinds of quantities.
Yes, that is very true, Dr. Watson. And we also need to be careful when we just copy and paste standards from elsewhere, because these standards are very population specific. So what may be safe for one population based on their consumption may not be true for us here. So it's very important that we do carry out these dietary studies so we can have these more accurate consumption values so we can calculate the true risks that are associated with consuming a lot of the foods that we have here on our market.
To what extent is there a bridging of the gap between the new knowledge that researchers such as yourselves produce from the university and actually making a real difference and impact in the way that decisions are made, like for instance, selections of brands of rice that are being imported into the country? Because when you take the time to meticulously do the research that you do and you have the conversations with the national authorities, the decision makers, the regulators, you would want to believe that this then impacts future decisions. So in this regard then, what would you like to see happen? And I know that you touched on the recommendation that you made, one of which was continuous monitoring and regular evaluation of marketed rice products and cereals and water. How do we make that a reality, in your view?
Well, I know I cannot speak for BAFSA, but in our we haven't had regular conversations for a while, updates, but I know that that is a part of their mandate, and I know that's something that they're actively working on, and it really speaks to the role of the University of the Bahamas and Small Island Sustainability, because we see ourselves as helping to support national development and also strengthening of and development and creation of institutions that will accelerate our national development. And certainly the food sector is one of the health and food sector is one of those. So we are here to support the research that needs to be done. I know there are other agencies that may be investing in various kinds of equipment and various kinds of labs. But I think it's important as a country that a university where we can conduct this research freely. And that's an important part too, because on one hand, we want to support national and governmental efforts. But on the other hand, we also have to make sure that faculty have the freedom, the academic freedom to conduct various kinds of research and studies that may not be complementary to government or any government of the day, because ultimately we want to make sure that we conduct these studies not being biased or pressured in one way. Not saying that it doesn't happen, but I'm saying it's important that we support government, but at the same time, we have that freedom to do other kinds of independent studies. And so we continue to talk to a lot of the agencies. One of the things that we are excited about, it's dragged on for a bit longer than we expected, is really the development of more laboratory capacity at the university. I think once we are fully installed with our key instruments, which we hope will be before the end of the year, we can now see more studies done, and we can start to work more collectively with our partners to help fund those studies.
That is so very important. That is so very important. I want to focus on a couple of the recommendations that you've made as a result of the findings of the study, one of which is to expand what you've learned to focus on metal contaminants in cooked rice from various restaurants and eateries. That would certainly be important and have some implications.
That is definitely true. Because although raw rice may have a high concentration of the metal, but depending on how the restaurant or the individual prepares the rice, that can affect the concentration of the metal. For example, if you wash your rice or soak it overnight before you cook it, that significantly reduces the amount of metal concentration that's in the rice. But there's a downfall to that too. Not only that it reduces the metal concentration, but it also washes off all the essential trace metals that are good for you away with that as well. And then you have other ways some restaurants make or some individuals may prepare their rice that does not contribute to the reduction of the metals in that rice. And if you add other ingredients that may contribute to other heavy metals in that rice. So, for example, maybe the beans or the peas you're adding to the rice itself might have heavy metals, while the rice have heavy metals. But when you cook both of them together, you increase the amount of heavy metals that you are giving to the consumer, which will be much, maybe much higher than what is recommended for them in one intake.
You've also suggested that there should be future studies on not only the rice grains, but the rice-based products, especially those consumed by infants and children. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yes, that there is very,
Very,
very, very,
very
very
important.
important. Every, in the US, in China, in Japan, in Europe, they have done these studies, and all of them have one conclusion in common, that most of these products contain metals in concentrations that are not good for that child and can have very serious health implications. And we are purchasing our products from these different places. We are getting our baby milks, the rice-based materials from these different places, but we are just accepting it without doing well, to the best of our knowledge, doing our own investigations, testing for metals and these things, and calculating risks that may be associated with consuming these products, with our kids consuming these products. So that is something that we really need to take seriously. And that is something that needs to be done urgently.
And Tamika, if you were to just do a simple Google search, you would find many recent examples in the US of arsenic or other heavy metals in major brand cereals and foods for baby and infants. So that is certainly a concern because of, mentioned these non-carcinogenic risk. There could be risks to neurological, other kinds of developmental risks that it pose to children or infants. Now, we don't want to overblow and scare the population into not feeding your child or anything, right? But we're just saying that these are, we can't ignore them, and we should position ourselves as a country where we have a more a sort of a regulatory regime and a testing regime that is a bit more robust. And I know that that's something that we are working towards.
Understood. Knowledge is power. We'll take our second break and be back after this.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics and procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields, and they are here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies, and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Welcome back to University Drive. We've been talking with Carlton Watson, Dr. Carlton Watson, and Dr. Williamson Gustav about their study concerning arsenic contamination and rice in the Bahamian market. And we've been having a very healthy conversation about the findings of that study, implications, and how this portends for database decision-making at the policy level and at other levels. But certainly this study has emanated from the Small Island Sustainability section of University of the Bahamas. And we all know and can appreciate how important it is for us to focus on matters and aspects that have repercussions for the Bahamas as a small island developing state and other small island nations. Can you two gentlemen tell us anything further concerning what's happening with SIS at UB?
So one of the main things that we are focusing on and really closing in on is, as I mentioned earlier, is the completion of the installation process of some of our main instruments, analytical instruments. And we're scheduled to hopefully by beginning of October to have final qualifications of those instruments. What that means then is that we would be in a better position to start to collect data, conduct studies, but even in the absence of some like qualification, because that's really done for the purpose of when we start to provide services as an accredited lab. So we can start to produce some data even now. And Dr. Gustav is actually doing a lot of work on soils and actually discovering a lot of interesting things about the soils. And like you said, we have to be, as a university, if we are true to our mission, we have to be in a position where we are producing new knowledge. We're not just simply going to teach from a textbook or teach what has been taught before or what has been known before. And I think the beautiful thing about this is that we're also integrating our students into the research, because they will be the future researchers that will really carry this work forward. Right now, we have a series of projects that we're engaged in, and they're all, you know, lots of different things, because SIS, we have several areas that we're focusing on.
At Small Island Sustainability, for our listeners.
Yes, Small Island Sustainability. We have several areas that we're focusing on. Mangroves, so we're in short order, we'll be conducting mangroves research project with a number of stakeholders in the environmental and marine space, including the forestry department. We also have work that we're going to start with a focus on blue carbon. You know, may read the paper. There's a lot of interest and a lot of discussion, both for and against blue carbon. And you may have read where the Bahamas, our seagrass, we have the largest distribution of seagrass in the world. And it has recently been discovered that that the carbon content in seagrass is much more concentrated than in other kinds of blue carbon sources. These, again, speak to, or these activities speak to the need for the university to be leading this these kinds of research. Right now, a lot of that research is being done by external partners, and I know it is the aim that we will start to take on this research. And of course, the Bahamas is wide, its expanse is wide. We don't expect that we'll be able to do all of this work ourselves. And we will ultimately be working in global partnerships. But again, the university, which is a representation of the people, should really be the forefront of determining the focus of this research. So there are lots of potential studies. We are also doing product development and looking at other kinds of natural products and studying the composition of those products for benefits. So it's not all just looking for what is wrong or what is dangerous. There's also the flip side of that. We have a very rich ecosystem, and we have lots of potential for studies on the benefits. You know, we always talk about things like cerise and all of these other plants that we use, but there's a need to try to quantify and again do more scientific studies to really look at the benefits of some of these things. And so hopefully moving forward, we will start to do some of that work as well.
Go ahead.
I think Dr. Gustav may want to add something as well.
Yeah, like Tamika, I'm sure you're well aware of that we are doing a lot of research in SIS, and a lot of our research, and it's been one of our main focus to have them very student-led. Our students have published papers both locally and internationally, and we've been looking at issues that are dear to us. So for example, soil salinity, that's one of the areas that we're currently focusing on. And another area that we've been doing a lot of work on is the quality of backyard farms. We've been encouraging Bahamians to backyard farm, but we have been, well, we don't really know what the status of these backyard farms are. Are these individual farms going to be profitable or successful? We don't know that. And we do understand that one of the determining factors for the success of any farm is the soil quality. So a lot of our projects have been aimed towards measuring soil quality for these backyard farmers. And we provide the results to them free of charge, in addition to giving them free advice on what they could do to their soils to improve the quality of these soils. We have been doing a lot of work in Grand Bahama. Since Hurricane Dorian, we've been monitoring and tracking the recovery of the soil condition in Grand Bahama. We have data for that since 2020, and we've been in a way blessed to have the ability to visit Grand Bahama at least once a year, collecting soil samples and monitoring how that area is recovering since the storm.
And Tamika, if I may, you know, a lot of what I've said and what we've said has been focused on the scientific side of it, right? The natural science, the conservation science side of it. But key to the mission of SIS is, you know, producing the data for decision making, for policy making, but also ultimately, we are focused on supporting healthy communities, Bahamian communities. When we talk about that's physical health, financial health, looking at sustainable livelihoods. And so as we move forward, SIS is really, you can see as a central hub to look at sustainability in its totality, which is the environmental side, the social side, and the economic side. So it's at that intersection that we can talk about sustainability. So it's not just the measurements, but what those measurements mean and ultimately how they can improve the lives of ordinary Bahamians.
Very good. And that is how the university comes alive within the community and in the lives of individuals. I know that everyone that's listening may not be aware of the expanse of programs that one can come to UB and study under the banner of Small Island Sustainability. Why don't you share about that?
Okay, so we're really excited about the programs. We've done an extensive revision and it's over a year and a half, two now. And it's really culminated in what we believe is a a very attractive program, and it's a program that will support national development, our marine science program. So it's not just the marine biology, although we know that most of the students that we speak to are interested in marine biology, but there are other forms of oceanography, or marine chemistry, marine geography, all of these things. A student can come and be a part of the program and explore. One of the exciting parts about the program is that there's a mandatory study abroad. So if students want to take more specialized courses that may not be offered at UB, but also just to be exposed to different cultures, a different environment, I think it's very important. The other thing that we are focusing on is also ensuring or focusing on student experience. So there are courses where students can travel to the Family Islands, can conduct research or special topics or special projects. And the beautiful thing about it is most of the cost of the travel and all of the other kinds of associated costs are covered within the tuition. So if students are on the grant, it would be quite beneficial to them, because at the end of the day, we do not want to create any barriers for students. If they are willing to put in the work hard, we want to make sure that they can be successful in whatever they do. So that's just the marine science program. The other thing that we are in the process of working as a part of our goals for this year is the completion of the master's in marine science. There's a great need for that. There are lots of studies that are conducted in country, and we do have a cadre of Bahamians conducting that research, but we need more. We need much more trained Bahamians in the marine and environmental space. So we're developing the marine science masters as well as the environmental science masters. We're looking at the revision of the ecotourism degree program so that it offers students the opportunity to look at a more eco-based degree, or give them the option of which currently exists something that is in the within the tourism sector, you know, being attached to a hotel or a lodge of that like. And ultimately, we will work on revising a sustainability degree that will be a multidisciplinary degree, both at the undergraduate and graduate level. And those programs will allow us to look at things from the built environment, energy, which is also a very important consideration. Any of us who've been following the discussions or who's been looking at their light bill will know how important energy is, or when it goes off, we recognize how important it is, certainly. So there's a lot of exciting things that's happening within SIS. We're building our faculty cadre complement, and so happy to have young Bahamians like Dr. Gustav return home. And so for anyone who's listening out there who may be studying or have family or friends who are studying, I think one of the things we want to emphasize is that we want to make sure that the University of Bahamas and SIS is a place that people can come and contribute to development of the Bahamas and have great careers and build great lives by returning home. We're always proud of our Bahamians outside of the country doing amazing things. And we also have to make sure that people can be great at home as well. And so that's really our focus.
What a wonderful note to try to conclude and wrap up on, because all of us here represented on this show are alums of University of the Bahamas. So that is a great source of pride. And for you, Williamson, you've come full circle. You were once a student, you went abroad and you earned your PhD and you're back home, or you earned your terminal degree and you returned back home and back to your alma mater. Tell us about that, kind of like in a nutshell. We have a couple of more minutes.
I just want to say it's been an exciting journey. I've been a student here at the Dean College of the Bahamas, and I have returned as a faculty member at the University of the Bahamas. And believe it or not, most of the individuals who taught me are still there, and I'm still learning from them. And I'm in a position now where I'm also contributing and ensuring that students have the same experience that I had and that they can benefit from the same benefits that I gained from the University of the Bahamas.
That's awesome. As Carlton was talking about the opportunities that are available through the programs for students to learn through practical aspects, and I was thinking about experiential learning and how that makes so much, that it makes all the difference, especially when you're talking about learning in an area like small island sustainability. How have students been embracing that?
Our students have been really taking that on. I can speak from the research students that I normally take on every semester. Like, we now have a line, like 10, 15 students every semester are coming and they want to participate in the research. They want to be able to not only collect the data and write the papers, a lot of them are interested in getting their work published and getting their name out there. So they have been benefiting a lot from that. And we've been receiving a lot of support from Dr. Watson and SIS in ensuring that they can achieve this, regardless of which department or which school they are coming from, as long as they show an interest in research and they are willing to do the work, we support and we accept them. So it's been a very beneficial venture for the students for the most part.
Okay, so I am going to toss it over to you both to offer some wrap-up comments.
Okay, so I just want to get, again, thank you, Tamika, and to emphasize the exciting things that are happening at SIS. I can't say enough about it. I mean, I could spend a whole show. And perhaps in the near future, when your schedule isn't so busy, that you can invite me on just to talk about the some of the programs that we have going on. But one of the things, too, I didn't mention in courses, like we have a scuba dive course and allow students to be certified. And so we also see this as an exciting course for majors and non-majors, just to increase the number of Bahamians who are able to navigate the marine environment. And as you know, the Bahamas is over 95% water.
And that's awesome. I think I'll take that one.
Yes, it's open to faculty and staff. And we've had to add extra sections. But this is something I also always emphasize when I talk to stakeholders, why I'm so passionate about the university, is that you can get your greatest bang for your buck at the university. When you think about how many efforts we've had in terms of getting Bahamians trained for scuba diving, it's just so much more efficient at the university because we just have so many students here and we have the access. And now we're bringing on the faculty who can support that. We have many people who are in the area may know of Dr. Valier Delavaux. He has joined us. He is has all of the certifications, dive, you know, scientific dive instructor, and he'll be leading the those courses. But we're also offering it in Grand Bahama. So that's the other thing that we want to mention, that SIS is really navigating this model of ensuring that as we build the institution at Oaksville, that we also focus on the development of the Northern Bahamas campus. And one of the major discussions has been that campus will eventually be the STEM and the environmental marine science campus. And so that's something that is also exciting because we're not just the University of Nassau or New Providence. We have to be the University of Bahamas for all of the Bahamas. And that's something that we're working on. And that's why those courses that I mentioned, you talked about experiential learning, we really focus on getting students outside of the Bahamas, getting in touch with where their parents may have grown up, or an island that they may be interested in, their favorite family island for a regatta. But it would be a great thing to go there and actually do research, not only scientific research or natural science research, but sociological research, economic research. There are lots of needs, and we have students who are eager to be challenged. And I think once they are challenged sufficiently and given the support and the resources they need, we've shown over and over again that Bahamians will rise to the occasion. So we're really optimistic about our young people.
Awesome. And you, Williamson?
For me, this semester, we are focusing on studies that try to understand farmers' perception of soil health and how it actually correlates with the actual soil health. Because every time I speak with local farmers and I would ask them about their farms, and they will let you, they will tell you it's, you know, it's very healthy and it's good for growing this crop and that crop. And believe it or not, when you actually do the measurement, their answers are very correct. So we now want to understand or try to identify which criteria they are using to make these judgments and to see if we can report it so others can begin to use it and see how they can rate the soils without having to invest heavily in the machines or kits that you would need to measure soil health. So that's what we're focusing on for this academic term.
I want to thank you both for joining us as guests, especially for joining us as the first set of guests for season 10 of University Drive. Join us again next time, same time. Thank you. I've been your host, Tamika Lundy, and I will see you again very soon.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.